Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello everyone, welcome to Stacking the Box. Ian McMillan here, Sterling Holmes. We are back again to recap the 2024 NFL Draft. It's been a not fun few days for me since the draft happened. I'm sure there are people who probably watched Stacking the Box live stream and my reaction to it. Sterling, you're laughing. I'm sure this is going to be a fun show for me. So let's get things started off. Sterling, how are you? The Chiefs killed it once again, because of course.
Yeah, I'm good, man. Board really fell the Chiefs' way, huh?
Yeah, suppose so.
Well, I suppose when you take, you know, players and positions and BPA instead of, you know, a quarterback when you just gave Kirk Cousins 90 plus mil guaranteed. But no. I'm sure the Falcons have a great game plan. They're a great front office, so I'm sure they know what they're doing.
Yeah, before we get into recapping the draft, because that's what today's show is going to be, obviously. That's the talk of the NFL world. Guess what? DraftKings is offering a fantastic sign-up bonus for new users. New customers can place a $5 bet on any sport instantly claim $200 in bonus bets when you sign up using our code STB. You will also receive one no-sweat single-game parlay every single day. The best part is that you will get both rewards even if your first bet loses. Using our code STB not only gets you these bonuses, but it also helps directly support our podcast. My brain is still mush.
Are you okay, man? Like, I want to give you a hug, dude. I just want to give you a hug and place a bet.
If you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code STB to maximize your first bets. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for the full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Sign up for DraftKings right now. If you haven't already, then you're being a silly goose. Do it right now. Use code STB and get $200 in bonus bets when you place your first $5 bet.
Have you just been crushing bourbon or something? Like, I feel so bad for you.
I wish, but no. So yeah, let's just dive right into it, because like I said, we're going to be talking about the NFL draft. We might as well start with the story of the draft, which is that at number 8 overall, the Atlanta Falcons, after just paying Kirk Cousins over $100 million, drafted Michael Penix Jr., the quarterback from Washington, whose over-under on draft position heading into the draft was 32.5, so he was like a coin flip whether or not he's going to be a first-round quarterback or not, selected number 8 overall by the Falcons. I was live streaming for Stacking the Box when that pick happened, and I then had a live stream for another three and a half hours, and I never fully recovered, and I still haven't, as you can tell by me trying to do that ad read. My mind has gone in circles since then. It's just turned to mush. It was tough to get through that show after that pick, because I had to talk with other teams. I had to bring in other guests. I did bring up Michael Penix Jr. about 85 times the rest of the show. I couldn't help myself, but it was a grind to get through, Sterling. That was I haven't been that shocked in a long time.
Since last year when they took a running back when they already had a 1,000-yard rookie running back, or
no? Well, see, I thought last year they might do that, because their draft strategy ever since the new GM has come in, that they're always going to take the best player available. So heading into last year's draft, I was like, I don't want us to take Bijan Robinson. I can almost guarantee they're going to take Bijan Robinson. So I did expect it this year. I was ready for it. And I was like, if Rome Odunze is available for us, he'll be by far the best player available. That's who we're going to draft. I even bet on the Falcons to take a wide receiver with their first pick, because I knew there's no way they were taking a pass rusher. The pass rusher, whatever one was available for them, there's no way they're going to be the best player available. They're like minus 250 to be to take an edge rusher first. I knew they weren't going to. So I got ahead of it this year. I was like, listen, I know they're going to take a wide receiver. Rome Odunze is going to be the best player available. I was ready to cash that bet. And then the words come across the screen. The Falcons, number 8 overall, have selected Michael Penix Jr., quarterback, Washington, and I almost fell out of my chair.
If it was J.J. McCarthy or Bo Nix Would that be any better for you, or is this still the same?
It would be better, but also worse. It'd be better in the sense that it would make more sense that in that those quarterbacks are more project quarterbacks, guys that who probably need, I mean, we'll see with J.J. McCarthy, but I think at least Bo Nix probably needs a year or two behind a vet. And they're still young, at least younger than Penix Jr. Now, Penix Jr., I actually like him better as a quarterback. I think he will have a better NFL career. But his age is what gets me. The fact he's turning 24 in a couple weeks. So the contract with Kirk Cousins is 2 years guaranteed. So, I mean, unless he gets hurt, at the very least, he'll be 26 years old before he takes his first regular season snap for the Falcons. That's a big if Penix was 20, 21, 22. I'd be fine with this pick, and I'd be able to get behind it. But it's his age that bothers me the most. Because like I said, if they move on from Kirk after 2 years, which is what the contract's guaranteed for, he's 26. And if it's the full 4 years or even the fifth-year option, he's 28, 29 before he takes his first snap, which is unbelievable to think about. So, yeah. So I like the player Penix better than the other two quarterback options. But in terms of his age, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I like the player better as well. Had a chance to talk with Michael Penix Jr. You're getting a good guy. I really do think he's a good dude. He'll fit in the locker room. The injuries, I think, are a little bit of a concern as well. Was it 4 years having a season cut short by injuries?
Yep.
The longer I thought about it, the more it kind of makes sense for the Falcons, right? Like it makes sense in that if you're going to move on after 2 years, if you want to give this guy a couple of years to get ingrained into the NFL, Kirk Cousins, great veteran. He'll then go into a playoff ready team. I get that stuff, right? Quarterback's the most important. Great comment by Josh. Well, on the bright side, yeah. Penix has NFL vet knees.
Perfect.
Nails. But when you look at Michael Penix, you're sitting here going, all right, quarterback's the most important position to get right in the NFL. They're trying to maybe do this like the Chiefs did with Alex Smith and then get Mahomes. Well, the issue is Alex Smith wasn't on this massive contract. Alex Smith, they kind of knew this, that he was going to have 1 year left and then they were moving on from him. Kirk Cousins has 2 good years. How the hell do you move on from Kirk Cousins? Then you really just wasted a first round draft pick. Now, the other thing I wanted to point out was I think it's very easy to sit back, and at 8's a little easier or a little harder to make this comparison because Roma Dunze and some other great players were there. Start getting down to like 12, where Bo Nix was taken. If you look historically at picks 12 to like 16, yeah, there's some great players there. There's also a lot of misses. So if you're going to miss, missing on quarterbacks is not a horrible strategy because that's how you take the next step in football. Andy Reid was a great head coach. He became great when he got Patrick Mahomes. He was really good with Alex Smith. He was really good with Donovan McNabb. But he became a Hall of Fame head coach for sure when he got Mahomes. Right? Bill Belichick, really good head coach all around the NFL, right? All college, everywhere. He became a Hall of Fame head coach when he got Tom Brady, right? Like, Tampa Bay Buccaneers were a really good team. They got Tom Brady, they won a Super Bowl. Like Matt Stafford, same thing with the Rams. Like the list goes on and on and on. So you're always trying to find a game changer in that position. It just felt like they should have waited at least another year. But you look at the quarterback class coming out next year, you're not going to have that high of a draft pick. You can kind of talk your way into it making some sense for the Falcons. I'm just trying to help you out here, Ian. I wouldn't have done it. I still think it was kind of dumb, but I can at least understand a skosh of why it could make some sense.
Yeah, the rational part of me, and this is what kind of the message was coming from Falcons management too, was that if Kirk Cousins is as good as they're hoping that he's going to be, they're not going to be having a top 10 pick while he's there. So let's say they wait 2 years and then try to go get a quarterback. Well, now you have what? I mean, it's going to be the 32nd overall pick, but let's say for argument's sake, the 22nd overall pick, the 22nd overall pick, like an elite quarterback's not falling to 22, or you have to, you know, pay a king's ransom to move up inside the top 10 to get an elite quarterback. So their thinking is this is hopefully the last time for a number of years that we're going to have a top 10 pick. And we really like this quarterback. We got to take him now because we don't know the next time we're going to have a top 10 pick. So that part of it makes sense. But still, I just keep going back to his age. It's just tough to think that like this guy who you just drafted eight overall, at minimum, unless Kirk gets hurt, at minimum, or I guess unless he stinks, if he stinks up a storm and he sucks this year, I guess they can probably turn to him. But let's say he plays decent in the first 2 years of the contract. At minimum, he's going to be 26 when he takes his first regular season snap for the Falcons, which is tough. That's Braden Whedon kind of age when he was drafted by the Browns. So that's just the concern. But hey, there is a world where this all works out perfectly and the Falcons look like geniuses. Now, it does kind of actually make me a little bit more confident how stupid it looks, because, I mean, the Seahawks had that famous draft that everyone drafted as an F grade. They said it was one of the worst drafts in NFL history, and it turned out to be like the best draft class in NFL history. So I've now like convinced myself that maybe this plan was so crazy that it might just work, and maybe it's going to look genius in a few years. Well, also, it may look idiotic in a few years. But
and that's the thing, is we're so quick to judge before these dudes ever take a snap. Now, of course, that's what we do on this show. This is what we get paid the big bucks to do. Like, this is our job. We try and break it down and have a nuanced take. But it seems like every single year, for example, the Eagles get lauded for their draft and what, right? Like, it seems like Howie Roseman, how is he getting away with this? And then a lot of those picks, you're like, oh, those were clear-cut misses. Like, the Detroit Lions got shelled last year because they kept taking players at non-value positions, right? They weren't taking, you know, a quarterback or a tackle. They took a safety. They took a linebacker. They took a tight end. And all those guys were massive hits, right? So I do think at some point, and running back, right? It was like, what are you doing? You don't build a team that way. And then you saw what the Lions did this year, and particularly those four guys. You go, oh, okay, so they knew what they were doing. Like, I think at some point, we do need to take a little step back and let these guys and let their plans play out. But it's also so much damn fun to judge right now. So that's what we're going to do. Six quarterbacks taken in the top 12. A little bit of a surprise. I think four was almost guaranteed in the top 12. I think two other ones, Bo Nix, and I thought Michael Penix Jr. because of age, were going to be question marks. Again, you looked at the betting odds, 32.5 was the number for Michael Penix Jr. I love the talent of Michael Penix, but the injuries and the age were of concern. I think Bo Nix was the other one that was slightly questionable. Yet, six quarterbacks went in the top 12. What does this overall say to you?
I think overall, especially, not to keep going back to Penix Jr., but we are talking quarterbacks. I think teams valued specifically Penix Jr. A lot more than I think the media did, because when the pick first happened, one of my initial reactions was, why didn't we just trade back if we were going to take Penix? I thought he would have been available, you know, in the 20s. But then reports came out there's three different teams trying to trade up to take Penix Jr. in the top 10. So, and then Bo Nix, too. I guess the Broncos value him really high. I don't know if that's necessarily, you know, consensus amongst most teams, or if that's just a Broncos thing that they really liked him.
Known for developing and drafting really good quarterbacks in the past 20 years. Yeah.
Right. So I think my big takeaway is that, you know, more so Penix, but at least to some extent, both those, you know, quarterback number five and quarterback number six and Penix and Nix, teams value them more than the media does. And that's why, you know, some of these mock drafts that we look at, they're interesting, and they tell us, you know, who some of the top players are, but I don't think, did anyone have Penix going top 10? I don't think a single person did. So not all the time do these media guys, you know, obviously us included, but we're not insiders, know what these teams are thinking or what they're doing. The over-under for quarterbacks taken in the first round was set at 5.5, and the over-hit in 12 picks.
Yeah. I think what this tells me is you have to get quarterback right, and that every single GM is trying to find the next game-changing quarterback. You can find an average quarterback. Right. You can find your Gardner Minshews, right? You can find that almost anywhere on the free agent market, even if you want, right? You can find your Russell Wilsons now on a, for the Steelers, a very, very cheap deal, right? You can find those guys. But can you find a guy that elevates your team? It can be on a rookie contract for 4 or 5 years. That's the biggest thing these guys and these teams are trying to find. If you don't have it, it's very hard to even compete for a championship. San Francisco have been the outliers. Do you want to go with the outliers or do you want to go with the norm? So teams are trying to do this, and you're seeing a distinct cutoff, right? if you're a second round or third round quarterback projection wise, just hypothetically here, I think a lot of people probably had Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., some of these guys, second rounders, maybe third rounders, even 10 years ago, right? But those guys are now getting bumped up to the first round because of the value of quarterback. While you'll see seeing guys like the next tier down, the third and fourth rounders, the fourth and fifth rounders, they're getting pushed back rounds. The Spencer Rattlers. You can find a backup quarterback anywhere. If you think a quarterback's not going to be a starting quarterback, why are you even considering drafting them before the first four rounds? Right. Teams really aren't anymore. They're not drafting quarterbacks in rounds two, three, four. It's either you're a first rounder and you're worth giving up a first round draft pick for, or that's fine. We'll wait until the fifth round and on, and maybe we'll take a flyer as a backup quarterback spot for you. The Joe Miltons. Again, the Spencer Rattlers. That's what this tells me. The six QBs in 12 picks. Just found it fascinating, the new landscape of the NFL, which kind of brings us into the next point, which is offensive players only the first 14 picks. No defensive players taken in the first 14 picks. Does that kind of tell you the same thing too, where teams now are trying to be offensive heavy, or is this an outlier, just 1 year, not a big deal?
I think it's mostly an outlier. I mean, even in mock drafts, I mean, the first defensive player most guys had going was at number 8 to the Falcons, just because defensive pass rusher was such a big need for the Falcons, and quite frankly, still is a big need. But so I think it's a little bit of an outlier. I think everyone expected it to be a bit of a weak class for defensive players. The strength of this class was, you know, all offensive positions. Is a great quarterback class, is a great wide receiver class, is a great offensive tackle class. You had Brock Bowers, one of the best tight end prospects in recent history as well. So I think that part of it, I think quarterbacks, six quarterbacks in the top 12 tells a story in terms of the long term. I think the no defensive players taken in the top 14 picks is more a story of this draft class compared to necessarily a trend that we're going to see in the coming years.
Yeah, I would actually agree with that. And I think runs always happen, right? Once you see one position, all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, I want to be the last one, so I'm going to keep going and doubling down at that position. You see the run on tackles, the run on quarterbacks, the run on wide receivers. You're completely right. I mean, at one point you saw a run on cornerbacks until later on in the draft. It's just how it goes. It goes with runs, and that's what happened here. I think you're correct. This is more of an outlier than it really is much something that we should look at going forward into the future. Biggest round one surprise. Obviously, we're not using Michael Penix Jr. for you.
Was it just their nose defensive player in the top 14 picks? Would that be my number one surprise? Liatu Latu being the first defensive player might be a surprise, although I bet on him being the first defensive player because I like the odds. That was a big surprise. Not many people had him being the first pass rusher. A lot of people had Dallas Turner. I think he was like minus 200 or minus 150 to be the first defensive player selected. So in terms of the surprise for the first round outside of Penix going number 8, I would say that's what it, or also even you could talk about Quinyon Mitchell, the corner. That might be it, dropping all the way to the Eagles at number 22. Some people had the Falcons taking him at number 8 as well. So I think overall it's the fall of all these defensive players. And I think it was a result of what we were talking about earlier with six quarterbacks going in the top 12. That then pushed a ton of studs, especially on the defensive side of the ball, down in the draft. So you could go any route. You could go, like I said, Liatu Latu being the first defensive player. You could go Quinyon Mitchell, the best corner, dropping all the way to 22. I think it has to relate to one of those defensive players.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Matthew in the chats also brings up a good point. The Bills trading with the Chiefs. I thought that was a massive surprise. I did not think that. And for as little as it was, like, I thought there's going to be a massive markup because the Bills and the Chiefs, that the Bills would say, yeah, sure, guy, we'll trade with you, but you got to give up extra. The Chiefs give up less. It was almost like, you know, the Chiefs keep bullying the Bills, and then the Chiefs are like, hey, friend, we're friends now, right? I won't steal your lunch. And then the Bills are like, oh, well, thank you, bully. Thanks for not stealing my lunch. And then the Bills gave this to the Chiefs for very little. The Chiefs like, nah, dude, we're playing with you. Give us your lunch money too. That's basically what the Chiefs did. They just bullied the Bills yet again.
How does it feel to now root for a team that just can't do anything wrong?
Oh, it's awesome, dude. It's fucking badass.
It's got to be like, not only do you guys have the greatest quarterback in the NFL, maybe might end up being the greatest quarterback of all time. Not only have you won three Super Bowls, but now you're just, even in the draft, making unbelievable moves and just bullying your opponents. That's awesome.
Like, this is just, it's just nuts, man. Like, when we finally got the Chiefs and they finally got the first overall draft pick and there was no quarterback and they had to take Eric Fisher. Eric Fisher, solid career, right? But like, they needed a quarterback. Finally, the Chiefs have one. No quarterbacks are there. Like, the Chiefs have been a cursed franchise from like the late 70s, early 80s to 2012, since Andy Reid got there, basically, right? I mean, really. And even then, even a little into the Andy Reid tenure where they could never get past any play. I mean, they hadn't won a playoff game since 94. Like, they were a horrendous team. They had great fan base and all that stuff. They had the whole Save Our Chiefs organization and flying banners and all. Like, they were brutal. The Chiefs, I don't want to say deserve this, but like, they went through as much as any other organization. They had their fair share of just depressing, horrendous things happen to them. So where they are now, I'm happy for, obviously me, I'm a Chiefs fan, but I'm happy for all Chiefs fans who've been around that and got to experience the dark days now to the glory days, right? It's awesome. I think for me, though, some of the biggest surprises were, again, defensively, you're right. But I think Cooper DeJean not going in the first round, that was a massive surprise. Massive surprise to me. I thought he might have been the first cornerback taken. Couple other small ones. Jordan Morgan going where he did offensive tackle at 25. Thought that was a slight surprise. I had him pegged more as a second rounder. I thought there was a little bit of a reach for the Packers, but I think he actually fits the Packers style very well. So there's a little bit of a schematic fit there. And then the last two picks, Ricky Pearsall and Xavier Leggett, I thought were clear-cut second-round wide receivers. I love both those guys. Loved them both in the second round, around pick 45 to 50. Love Xavier Leggett. Love his accent. Great player. Great production, but only 1 year, right? That was very nerve-wracking. I was shocked when with all the wide receivers that were still on the board, that it was Pearsall and Xavier Leggett going 31, 32. That, to me, was a shock. So,
I'll say another surprise was the Raiders taking Brock Bowers. I don't think many people had them going tight end, especially since they just had Michael Mayer that they drafted in this early in the second round last year. So that was a little surprise. I know they were kind of different tight ends. So that was a surprise for me as well, if we're talking offensive players. A lot of people had them going to the Jets. A lot of people, you know, had them fall into the Colts or the Saints. I don't think anyone had them going to the Raiders. So
I was surprised, but not shocked. With Brock Bowers going to the Raiders. I was surprised because of Michael Mayer the year before, but not shocked because you look at Antonio Pierce, you figure that physical style of football, they want to run a lot of 12 personnel, but both Mayer and Brock Bowers can be that almost slot receiver, if you will, right? So I wasn't too surprised, I guess, to an extent, because it maybe was BPA best player available as well. Now, Brock Bowers is going to be a little bit of an outlier in the NFL. He's 6'3 as a tight end, which if you look at a lot of those tight end metrics, it's 6'4 and above, success, 6'3 and under. You got to dive deep, right? There's that distinct cutoff height-wise. But Bowers does bring a little bit of a uniqueness to his game. I didn't dislike it by the Raiders, but yeah, you're right. To me, they almost chose BPA at 13 instead of trying to find a fit, which – when you're a team trying to compete without a legit stud quarterback, you got to keep building.
Yeah. What about who do you think had the overall best draft? I always think this is a little bit tough, at least for me. Maybe you're going to have a better answer than me, so you can go first here. Because after round two, I'm just not as familiar with the guys that they're drafting. So I don't have a hot take or a strong opinion about guys selected in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round. So it's hard for me. I'm mostly going to judge it based off the first round, but yeah, I'm curious who you think had the best draft.
Yeah. I think the Chiefs had a very, very good draft, but I think that's just, I think it's unfair to say they had the best draft. I think it's easy to say the Cardinals had a pretty good draft, right? I think I like what the Cardinals did overall. The Bears, for the most part, anytime you leave with your starting quarterback and your starting wide receiver, you can't complain too much now as they went on in the draft. I thought there were a couple of questionable picks there. But again, I like what the Cardinals did. Obviously, they also drafted and added Trey Benson at running back. I'm not a huge fan of running back, but they waited until the third round. I think he's got a good fit, offensive tackle, Isaiah Adams. I like that. And then going to the Bears, obviously in the third round as well, that I always butcher his name, but the tackle from Yale, I thought was pretty solid as well. I'll probably go, I think it's a little unfair just because they had multiple draft picks early on, but they also had a chance to mess it up and they didn't. I think also you might look at the Eagles and early on be pretty happy with what they did with Quinyon Mitchell, cornerback there, and then doubling down and getting Cooper DeJean. Now, I know I laugh because I said the Eagles always seemingly have a great draft, and what have they done typically in the regular season? But, I mean, I love both those picks. Those are both clear-cut value picks, too, of where they drafted those guys, and their secondary was by far their worst aspect of their game last year. So they very much vastly improved at a position of need and got great value at both spots too. So I think the Eagles had a nice draft too.
What about the Chargers early on? I actually really like the fact they didn't trade down. They kept that pick and they took Joe Alt. I think Joe Alt might be the safest pick in this entire draft. I mean, a massive offensive lineman from Notre Dame. I mean, you can't really go wrong with that. You got to protect Justin Herbert. And then what they did is they just kind of stayed put and then ended up getting Ladd McConkey, which was a great pick in the second round. So they didn't get, you know, one of the top three receivers with the first pick. But I think the drop off between those top three guys and Ladd McConkey is smaller than what they would have done, or what the, you know, the flip side of that would have been, which is the drop off from Joe Walt to whatever the tackle they could have taken in the early second round. So I thought the Chargers had a very smart first couple of rounds.
Yeah, I wanted to make fun of them, and I couldn't. They even drafted Brendan Rice in the seventh. Mm. That was a fourth or fifth round prospect that got in the seventh round. I was shocked by that. Again, as a Chiefs fan, I was a little upset they got Ladd McConkey, who I just know was going to feast against Kansas City. I love Ladd McConkey. You're right. I said the same thing when they drafted Alt. He's going to be playing right tackle because they have Rashawn Slater at left tackle right now, and I get that. And so people are talking about, like, is it going to be J.C. Latham? I'm like, no, why? Like, Joe, you play him at right tackle. You figure that out later. You draft the dude. Get the dude. That's Joe Alt. You worry about where they're going to play later. Just know that you have a blue chip player, like one of the clear cut blue chip players. So, yeah, I know it's hard because we're talking about, like, not messing things up. But how often do you see teams in the top five, top seven mess things up? They didn't. So for that, I'm, you know, got to tip your cap, if you will.
And I think you got to shout out the Arizona Cardinals, too. I mean, who knows how these players are going to work out? I think they did the obvious thing. I mean, there was rumors about them trading back or going a different receiver, but obviously did the smart thing in Marvin Harrison Jr. But reason why, I mean, you have to kind of like the Cardinals is just based on how many picks they had. You would think with the volume of picks they had, one of them is going to have to work out because they had the most picks in the top 100, I believe, or at least they did before the draft started. I don't know how the trades worked out for them. I like the Darius Robinson pick, but yeah, just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 picks in the top 90, and then an eighth pick at 104. So just by pure volume, especially for a team that has a lot of holes to fill that the Cardinals do, you got to hope at least a few of those picks hit.
Yeah, and again, Marvin Harrison Jr., Darius Robinson, who I like. Now, he's going to be a little unique piece. He went to the University of Missouri. I actually liked him fitting on Kansas City because Kansas City uses a lot of guys with versatility as far as playing both inside and outside. His position is a little fluid, Darius Robinson. So if the Cardinals can find a way to use him and not just try and fit a square peg in a round hole, they'll have success. But there's going to be a little uniqueness to Darius Robinson's game. That was her 27th pick. You know, Max Melton, the cornerback from Rutgers, stud. Trey Benson, again, I thought is going to be a really nice running back, a nice piece there. And they got a tackle in the third round with Isaiah Adams. You know, a lot of depth pieces later on in the secondary as well. I think Arizona, you're right, just based on volume alone, you have to be fairly thrilled. 12 picks overall for the Arizona Cardinals.
Now, tell me why the Falcons had the worst draft.
It wasn't great.
No, it wasn't great. We obviously, Penix Jr., we had that conversation already. Round 2, pick 35, you take Rook or Hororo, and I'm butchering that name, but that guy was like completely off the board and they traded up to get him. I can't say I know a lot about the guys, you know, that they got a little bit later in the draft.
I like Brandon Dorless from Oregon. You got him in the fourth round.
Of course, I think that was their best pick by far.
I agree. And it's also a defensive tackle with the same as Rook in your second round, he traded up to get. You're like, oh, okay. I mean, Dorlish should not have been there, in my opinion, where he was. I thought it was a good pick. Again, on paper, does not look great for the Falcons, but let it play out.
Right.
Ian, come on.
It's so hard to trash any of these drafts because, you know, in like 5 years, this will get clipped out and it's like, oh, this team actually drafted 5 Hall of Famers. And here's me being like, oh, this is the worst draft ever. So I'm trying not to be that guy. So, yeah, it's specifically the first two. And once again, this is so hard because I don't want to trash Michael Penix because I actually think he's going to be a great quarterback. But just situationally, I don't think it was the smartest thing for the Falcons to do.
No,
I think you're based on signing Kirk Cousins and then drafting Penix, you're building for the future and trying to win now at the same time. And I think that's conflicting.
Yes, that's hard. I think the Patriots also had a slightly underrated draft as well. Javon Baker, where he fell, I thought was a nice pickup. Obviously getting Drake May was nice to see. They kind of doubled down with getting Joe Milton late. I forget if that's the 5th or 6th round, that quarterback from Tennessee who just has a phenomenally strong arm. They basically are like saying, you know what? Sorry, Zappy, you're out too. We don't give a hoot. Mac Jones is already gone. Zappy, you're going to be gone too. Joe Milton's the complete opposite of all those stellar quarterbacks, right? They kept trying to get these guys who were, well, Bailey Zappi, I guess, is a little bit more of a gunslinger, but Joe Milton has one of the strongest arms we have ever seen. Like, it's insane how strong his arm is. Zero accuracy. But you're kind of hoping that, okay, if we ever need a spark, we'll go to Joe. And I thought it was a little fascinating pick there. The complete opposite of everything the Patriots have typically done at quarterback.
Yeah. Let's quickly, if you're down to do this, just go over some quick, because my favorite thing to do, as a sports bettor, as a degenerate, is to immediately look at, Rookie of the Year odds, because Rookie of the Year odds defensively don't really change depending on where a player gets drafted, but they do change quite a bit pre-draft and post-draft for offensive players, depending on, where they end, because, you know, production, especially for positions like receiver and running back, really depends about, you know, if you're a starter, first of all, second of all, you know, the surrounding cast, even for quarterbacks, and one player that kind of stuck out to me might be in a little bit of a tough situation. So Caleb Williams, obviously the betting favorite to be offensive rookie of the year. We all could have guessed that. Marvin Harrison, number 2, Jaden Daniels, number 3 at 9-1. The point that stuck out to me, at least amongst the top guys that I thought was the most noteworthy, Drake May, who is the number 3 pick in the draft, 6th on the odds list at 15-1. Patriots. Mm. Is that because of a lack of weapons? Is that because Jacoby Brissett might start the first couple games of the season? Is there value betting on Drake May? I mean, if you think he's going to be the day one starter, I mean, a 15-1 on a quarterback who's going to be a day one starter doesn't seem like that bad of an option. Or is this just odds makers and bettors just don't think Drake May is good? What are your thoughts in general about Drake May? 6th on the odds list, 15-1 to win offensive rookie of the year.
I mean, they do have, who is it? Pop Douglas. Like, they drafted some wide receivers.
Yes.
They don't have great weapons by any means. I think it's kind of a combination of new head coach too. You know, what's Gerard Mayo going to look like? What's that offense going to look like? I think he's the starter. I don't think Brissett's going to get game 1 or game 2. That would surprise me a little bit. I think it's just because, well, Caleb Williams for sure, right? That's the obvious. I think Jaden Daniels for sure because he's just an electric player.
Heisman winner, yep.
Yeah, he can do it. He's going to have a higher floor because he has his legs too. I'm right. A big fan of Jaden Daniels. I think he's going to be so fun to watch. I think Marvin Harrison Jr., just because, well, who the hell is Kyler Murray going to throw to?
Right.
And you expect him to just get wide receiver 1 target share. So I get those 3. Is Malik Nabers and Michael – no, who would it be? Malik Nabers above him and J.J. McCarthy?
Yeah. Okay. And then, I mean, Malik Nabers obviously have Daniel Jones thrown to you. So, I mean, that's the perfect example why I'd much rather bet on Marvin Harrison with Kyler Murray thrown to him than Malik Nabers. J.J. McCarthy, in terms of a quarterback, you assume he's a day one starter. You have Justin Jefferson to throw to.
And T.J. Hawkinson.
Right. So you have more weapons.
Is Hawkinson back? Whenever Hawkinson gets back. Yeah, sure. I know where. Yeah, man, that's hard.
I mean, Caleb Williams, when you look at the weapons the Bears have,
it's going to be awesome.
I mean, it might be value at plus 210 because running back, DeAndre Swift, then a receiver, you have DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Rome Odunze. Like, you have three great receivers, if you assume Rome Odunze is going to be as good as we all think. Cole Kmet at tight end. Offensive line might be a little bit questionable, of course, but when you just look at the weapons at the skill position, I can't remember the last time a rookie quarterback, day one starter, is going into, in terms of weapons specifically, is going into a better situation than Caleb Williams is going into this year.
Yeah, Houston last year, but we didn't know.
Right.
Like, you could say Houston last year, but we didn't know how good they were all going to be. On paper, I think you're right. It's the Bears. But we forget, or I think you're forgetting, it's Chicago.
Right.
They're going to ruin. That's the big thing. Right. They ruin every single quarterback. Like, it's what they do. Their best quarterback in NFL history is probably Jay Cutler, dude. Like, they just ruin everyone. I do think if you're putting money down, Caleb Williams is the safe, but it's the smart bet too. I don't know. I guess the only other sprinkle I would do is on Jaden Daniels, but you're probably not getting much value there either. And I think realistically, the weapons and just scheme and everything, you're going to go with Caleb Williams.
And here is, I'll shout out three other names. I mean, I'm surprised you didn't bring this up. Xavier Worthy.
No, because Hollywood Brown, Rashee Rice, Travis Kelce. Right. I would be shocked if Xavier Worthy got over 600 yards this year. Like that would surprise me.
Okay. What about Ladd McConkey? Justin Herbert thrown to him. I mean, is he wide receiver one right away? 29-1. Pretty nice odds there in Ladd McConkey.
Yeah, that'd be a really good sprinkle because he's going to be, I think, Justin Fields' favorite target.
And then the other position that we haven't talked about, the top running back on the odds list, Jonathan Brooks. You got to think going into Carolina. Now, Carolina's got a lot of issues, but I mean, he's got to be the day one starter. I don't think Chuba Hubbard's going to start over him or Miles Sanders. So Jonathan Brooks, at least at 34-1, you're looking at a guy who's probably going to be get the the majority of carries there in Carolina. But I mean, does that matter running behind the offensive line that the Panthers have? It might not.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch that. I would not touch Jonathan Brooks because, again, they give so much money to Miles Sanders. If he's still there.
Right.
What? And they'll find a way to just throw Chuba Hubbard in there. That's what the Panthers do. No, man, I would not touch anyone in Carolina.
So we like Caleb Williams, obviously. Little sprinkle maybe on Jaden Daniels and then a little sprinkle on Ladd McConkey, 29-1.
Yeah, I think Ladd McConkey's a sprinkle. That's the fun one. There's the value.
Yeah. Defensive rookie of the year. Is there anything that sticks out for you in terms of situations that certain players are going into? Dallas Turner to Minnesota, Leiatu Latu in Indianapolis. Those are the top two players on the odds list. It's usually, at least recent history, it's generally been edge rushers. There have been a couple corners over the past decade that has won defensive rookie of the year. Sauce Gardner obviously won it 2 years ago. So Quinyon Mitchell, 11-1. In Philadelphia, Terry and Arnold, 11-1. So those are the two corners if you want to go that route. Is there anyone you think, you know, that sticks out to you, or is there anyone off the top of your head who, you know, could be a dark horse for defensive rookie of the year? Obviously a lot closer of a race than offensive rookie of the year, because you can, you know, put up individual stats by yourself, especially if you're an edge rusher. It's just you against the offensive lineman in front of you. It doesn't really have anything to do with anyone else on the defense. So
yeah,
any thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's a couple. One, Dallas Turner's now the new Danielle Hunter, right? So yes. That's kind of interesting, but I think the Vikings defensive line as a whole isn't great. I'm looking at the Colts and Latu because I think there was an interesting piece next to him if they still brought him back. Yeah, they brought back DeForest Buckner with Raekwon Davis. Grover Stewart is a very underrated defensive lineman as well. Grover Stewart, a great name, but also underrated player. Than Kwity Paye. I like Latu probably. That's the guy I'd go with because I do think he's going to see a lot of one-on-ones. You know, I mean, almost all rookies are probably going to see a good amount of one-on-ones to begin with. But I think he was the most talented guy. It was the injury concerns that really had teams scared. But going to a good situation, the Colts seemingly always get rookies up to speed fairly quickly. I would go with Latu in Indy, which again, first edge take. It's not like I'm really taking a crazy pick here, but again, that's the better situation. I mean, if you're going situational, it makes some sense.
I'm going to throw it in because I think what the move is, I think you ought to take edge rusher just because historically, the especially the past, you know, decade or two, the majority of the time it is an edge rusher. And I think because it's a relatively weak class for defensive players, I don't think you have to take the top guy or the top two guys. So what about even like a Chop Robinson 16-1?
I was not huge on him coming out. So I personally am out there. I think Jerzon Newton at Washington, who was in the second round, is pretty intriguing. I thought he was going to be a first rounder for sure. I actually was hoping the Chiefs were going to take him if he was still there at 32. And then the Chiefs obviously surprised me and traded up for Xavier Worthy. I like Newton a lot. He had, what was it, 6.5 sacks last year, something like that. He was Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. Like, I think he's a very talented player. And again, it's not edge, it's interior. So maybe the sack numbers won't be there, but we know Washington's going to unleash some guys in the defensive line that typically done a pretty good job there. So I think Newton would be a nice little sprinkle as well. And I have no idea where his odds are.
Yeah, pretty good value there. 30-1 if you want to bet on Newton to be Defensive Rookie of the Year.
So, and they obviously got rid of a lot of defensive players there. So he'll at least get a early chance to start, which I think is huge.
And I think if I was going to go defensive back, I think you got to go Terry and Arnold, Detroit. Lions secondary was so bad. That, I mean, if he, you know, can play as well as he can really give the Lions, you know, an edge there on defense. Because, yeah, their secondary was terrible last year. So if he plays as well as they're hoping he'll play, you'll notice it when you look at the Lions defensive stats from last year to this year. If they all of a sudden turn into a good secondary and he plays a role in that, Terry and Arnold could win it there as a corner if you want to look at that position.
Well, same with the Eagles. And that's sure. Why I'm so super high on Cooper DeJean. Like, that was my guy.
The Eagles, there's just two of them. So, like,
sure.
Right.
But when the Chiefs traded up, I thought it was going to be for Cooper. I thought they were almost doing a Trent McDuffie 2.0. Like, because I thought, like, this is a top 10 player, top 12 player at a minimum. I go, oh, well, the value's there. They're probably trading up just for BPA, the best player. But like, they're going to trade up and do a Trent McDuffie 2.0. Right. And then they went Xavier Worthy. But I think Cooper DeJean could be that guy.
So just give me a breakdown of the Chiefs draft. Because like I said, after the Falcons took Penix, especially in the first round, I mean, my brain was scrambled the rest of the draft. You are obviously a Chiefs guy. You've talked about them a little bit. But what are your overall thoughts and takeaways from the Chiefs overall this past week?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I think there was a couple of ways they could have gone, but with the board falling the way it did, they went, I think, they went the upside route with Xavier Worthy at 28. Like, that's the upside wide receiver in my mind, right? Could you have got Ladd McConkey and tried to be a little safer? Yeah, I think Ladd McConkey was a safer play. And not because he's a slot, because I don't think Ladd McConkey is going to be a majority slot receiver in the NFL. He can play all over. Then they took the value pick, which was shocking to me, of Kingsley Suamataia at 63. They traded up one spot to get him. Like, the fact that he was still on the board when I think a lot of Chiefs fans, myself included, said if he was there at 32, I'd be very intrigued if the Chiefs drafted him at 32. You get him at the end of the second round. Not only that, you get a safety in Jaden Hicks from Washington State that a lot of folks had as the second best safety on all the boards. They got him in the fourth round. Right? They have a good red zone tight end. I'm not quite as high on him as others. He did have 8 touchdowns last year in college. Jared Wiley from TCU tight end. He's a big guy. He to me is more of a red zone threat. I think it's intriguing. Team fit wise, I'm still trying to see how he fits long term. Right now he's like tight end 4. And then I like some of the smaller moves, a 6'1 cornerback from the SEC, Kamala Hayden. He had been injured, so he fell down in the sixth round, which the last time the Chiefs drafted a injury-prone guy in the sixth round was Trey Smith. Worked out for them there. Then they also got a backup guard in Norzad from Penn State. Played center, played right tackle, played guard. He's just a depth piece that I actually like because they lost Nick Allegretti, so made sense. And as Matthew says, they drafted a whole bunch of guys with high RAS scores, high relative athletic scoring. They basically went with athletes and said, we're going to find a way to plug and play you. And it just so happened that those were at positions of need as well. So it was kind of a win-win for Kansas City this draft. But a couple other ways they could have gone about this draft. Actually, what if they didn't do that and did this instead? And I found myself happy either way. The Chiefs made a lot of really good moves.
Joshua also says Cooper DeJean may also get special teams touchdowns. Does special teams touchdowns go towards defensive rookie of the year? The voting for that?
I don't know. Maybe. I would assume so. I would assume it'd be hard not to be swayed by that, right?
Yeah, it would be. By the way, you can bet on those over at DraftKings. Sign up for an account using the code STB. If you have a hunch about who's going to win offensive or... Oh, there we go. The fireworks in the background. If you have a hunch who's going to win offensive or defensive rookie of the year, sign up. DraftKings. Code STB. Just something that I completely... I'm putting you on the spot here with this question, Sterling, because I don't have an answer for it. Because like I said, I pay attention to the first 2.5 rounds, and then I kind of... all the names kind of mushed together. Is there a player that was made maybe a later round pick? And once again, I'm putting you on the spot, so I may not have an answer. That would be this year's version of Puka Nacua. Is there, a skill position guy that maybe even the Chiefs took, or maybe, you wish the Chiefs took, that would have been a later round pick that you think could explode? Because Puka Nacua didn't win offensive rookie of the year, but I mean, any other year, he could have had a strong argument. Any of those players, a late round guy that you have off the top of your head?
That's a really good question.
And I know I put you on the spot. I didn't give you time to prep this. So
no, you're good. I like Brennan Rice in the 7th for the Chargers because seventh rounder. I like a lot about him. And again, he's going to a spot with the Chargers where, you have Quentin Johnson last year's first, who I don't really think is great personally.
No.
Ladd McConkey, I think, is going to be phenomenal. But I think there's going to be an opening for Brennan Rice to get some opportunities. So if you're talking about a late round guy who can find his way into the rotation, probably starts there. Mm. 4th round had a few guys, Troy Franklin, who I'm not super high on Troy Franklin, but if you're talking about opportunity there with the Broncos, he'll have some opportunity. Javon Baker, UCF with the Patriots, I think again, some opportunity there. Now, those are more of the late round shots, I guess I'm taking right there. As far as someone in the 2nd round who I thought went actually early, who I thought was going to be more of a 4th rounder. Where is he at? The guy from Alabama. What's his name? I know when I say what's his name, you're like, Sterling, I have no idea who you're talking about.
The guy from Alabama, one of 50 Alabama players that were drafted.
Maybe he went in the 3rd. Am I going crazy here? Am I taking crazy pills? Jermaine Burton. Yeah, he went in the 3rd round to Cincinnati. Jermaine Burton, he had some off the field issues. Sorry, 3rd round. I was looking the 2nd. 3rd round, Jermaine Burton from Alabama. Great player, all the tools, all the traits, off the field issues. But he went to Cincinnati. T. Higgins wants to be traded. Tyler Boyd's no longer there. Mm. They throw the ball a ton. Burton's going to get opportunity, and he'll be open because Ja'Marr Chase is on the other side. Now, I'm interested to see how that dynamic plays out between Burton and Ja'Marr Chase, and if T. Higgins is still there. But if you wanted to throw a little sprinkle on Burton, I wouldn't hate that.
I'll throw a running back out there, which I have read about that a lot of people are high on, but he didn't go to a great situation in terms of playing time, you would think, is Jalen Wright, drafted by the Dolphins, running back from Tennessee. I've heard a lot of good things about him, and it is kind of interesting that when you look at the offensive rookie of the year odds, he's pretty far up there, 40-1, despite, he's what, as of right now, 3rd on the depth chart at best? After the year that the running backs had in Miami, I don't know how he's going to get carries with Mostert, A-Chain, and then I guess Jalen Wright would be number 3, but Jeff Wilson's there as well. So not a great situation in terms of playing time rookie year, but it is a name that I've heard of that a lot of people are high on. That was a 4th round pick.
Yeah, I didn't understand that at all. They just like speed, baby. They're just going, we'll find a way. We're going to draft speed guys, and we will find a way. It's not like the Raiders back in the day when they just go, we're going to find speed guys and force you to be studs. No, Miami has done a good job of finding speed guys who make impact plays in games.
Yeah. 2025, we'll just finish the show on this here. Unless, do you have any other final thoughts or anything you want to talk about here for 2024?
I'm good, baby.
2025 betting odds have been released for who the number 1 overall pick in the 2025 NFL draft will be. And the betting favorite is Shedeur Sanders. You're be the kidding. Number 1 overall pick.
You're kidding.
I'm serious. At least as of yesterday. I'm having trouble finding it now because I'm in New York and we can't bet on the NFL draft in New York. So I can't have the latest odds. But as of yesterday, he was an even money favorite.
I'd take the field.
There was actually a prop bet that you could take if a quarterback is going to go number one or the field. And the field was, I think, plus 175. Like any non-quarterback to go first overall, I would take that. Because it's supposed to be a weak QB draft class. Now, obviously, things change. Guys can come out of nowhere and end up, you know, being the number one overall prospect. And if you look like a year away, it looks like if there's, you know, going to be a year where a non-quarterback goes first overall, it looks like it'd be next year.
Yeah, you got like a Clemson edge rusher. I like Luther Burden, wide receiver from Missouri, to go top three at least, top five at a minimum. You know, that's not a horrible sprint because I think he is going to be the clear-cut best wide receiver heading into the draft next year. Like he is the Malik Nabers, the Roma Dunze. I don't know if I can quite say Marvin Harrison Jr. yet, but dude's an absolute game changer, and you're going to see it this year at Mizzou. He was a phenomenal last year. He helped win multiple games for the Tigers. You're going
to say his name is
Luther Burden the third.
I did find some latest odds. I don't know if I see him on here.
I would be shocked if you didn't see Luther Burden the third.
Oh, there we go. 30-1 to be first overall.
Worth a sprinkle.
All right. But yeah, I was surprised it was Shedeur Sanders. I mean, is that, I don't know what that is. He's going to be drafted. Is he a first round quarterback? I mean, sure. I wouldn't argue that, but first overall is
strong, bold,
strong. It's a bold take. It's a bold take. I mean, that might be odds makers protecting themselves because he's, you know, such a, you know, a known name, and a public name that maybe they think they can get into action on a guy who has no chance. But, I mean, crazier things have happened. Yeah. Crazier things have happened. All right. I guess that's pretty much the show. We have gone through the 2024 NFL draft. Thank you all so much for watching. Like this stream, subscribe to Stack in the Box on YouTube. What's the next big date for the NFL calendar, Sterling?
OTAs.
OTAs. But we're going to bring you great stuff anyways. We got a lot to talk about and a lot to cover between now and the start of the season, which it actually will sneak up on us, as it always does.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I got a lot more Falcons takes to talk about between now and the start of the season. I'm in a little bit of a low spot on my Falcons, but I think this is going to be the lowest I'm going to feel. And then over the next couple months, you're going to see it develop on the show. I will convince myself they'll be Super Bowl champions by the time the season kicks off.
You did last year, so that was impressive.
Well, I didn't say Super Bowl last year. I said a playoff win.
A playoff win is MVP or something like that, I think.
A playoff win this year is written in stone. I that's not even a hot take to say this season.
I'll say they will make the playoffs this year.
All right, maybe we'll make a bet before the season starts. But that's why you got to be subscribed. Tune in every week. Monday, 5 p.m. Eastern is now the new time for the show for the time being. Thank you all so much for watching. Sterling at Homestretch KC, Ian at Ian Mac Betts. Thank you all for watching. We'll talk to you all.